I bet you could use a real break from the routine. I mean, sometimes vacations leave you even more exhausted. That is called burnout, my friend, and I'm here to help you. This podcast is brought to you by Atlanta Wellness Retreats, which has officially launched the first mini retreat on Saturday, February 18, called Calm in the Chaos. It's going to be a powerfully restorative afternoon of connection, meditation, and movement on the Atlanta Beltline, and is co-sponsored by Just Add Honey Tea Company. Be sure to say yes to doing something fun and different for yourself. Register at allisonhair.com/calm. This could be the most important podcast episode I have ever done in my entire 4 years. You are going to want to save this episode, share it, and you might want to listen to it over and over again. And I'll tell you why. My guest today is fan favorite Cindy Robinson, who is a parent and teen coach. Today, we're talking about understanding your adolescent or teenager. You might be in the season right now, you might be preparing for it, or you certainly know someone who is. But it's no secret that the adolescent and teen years are some of the most tumultuous, wondrous, confusing, frustrating, hang on to your seats roller coaster of all time, hell on earth. And we are going to help you through it. Why this podcast is so important is because the guidance and insight you'll hear today is completely flipped from the ways we were raised and the way culture is set up. Cindy has spent years poring over scientific data, research, and her experience sitting in rooms with parents and teenagers, and all of her insight will seem very different from anything we've ever learned before. I'll be honest, I entered this conversation with my arms crossed and skeptical, and then I left the conversation feeling lighter, more hopeful, more encouraged, and better equipped. But what I know is what she talks about works, and I'd recommend you listen to this with an open mind and an open heart. Let's jump in. We are back on the couch with Cindy Robinson. I feel like I'm seeing a mirage because I've missed you so much. Cindy, welcome back to the new and improved Late Learner podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here. I really love the new name.
Thank you. Today, we're talking all about understanding your adolescence. And oh my God, the feedback that I got preparing for this was like, it almost blew me over. Cindy, can you give some background on you?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. First of all, it's not easy understanding an adolescent, or we wouldn't have to have a podcast on it. My background is I am a parent and teen coach, and so I do spend a lot of time serving as an interpreter between parents and their teens, mostly specializing in teens who are struggling with gifted kid burnout, overachievement, what people will call unmotivated, depressed sometimes teens and the parents that are trying to raise them.
So. And also neurodiversity. Is that too true?
Yeah. I mean, I do land a pretty neurodiverse crew, both parents and the teens. It's not necessarily something I say I specialize in. I do specialize in the combo of ADHD and anxiety. But when you specialize in that combo, you're going to get a even wider range of neurodiverse crew. But yeah.
Isn't that everybody?
Is everybody neurodiverse or is it?
Well, ADHD and anxiety, it feels like it is an epidemic across the globe.
It covers a larger population than you might think. Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm so grateful to have you because we've done a lot of parenting conversations on this podcast before, always to great fanfare. And the reason for that is because, Cindy, you have a very unique approach. Or one that I think you say, I don't know if it's unconventional or there are methods. How do you explain it that are just not well known? They're not known enough. But when you explain it and then, you know, me being on the other side of this, applying it and it works is like, you know, I mean, you might as well be levitating to me. But how would you describe your style?
I guess I would say it's not necessarily mainstream, which is why I decided to do a coaching practice and bypass any sort of like therapy license because I really wanted the freedom to practice in the style that I wanted to. But really, I lean really heavily on research and brain physiology. And it just seems like for some reason, the geeks in the research lab and the therapists on the couch like weren't talking to each other. So I kind of created a little middleman position for people that I'm somewhere in between those two things.
Mm-hmm. So here we are, it's 2023. What are you seeing on your couch today? What is the challenge that people, what is there like a main theme of challenges that have come up recently?
Yeah, that everyone is falling apart. It's not going well.
Right.
It's not going well.
Let's dive right in.
Yeah, no, this is the worst semester of school that I've seen since I've been involved at all with teens and mental health and parents. So it just seems to keep getting worse. Things were already bad, and then the pandemic really messed everybody up. But this semester in particular, like getting back into school this year, the 2022-2023 school year, seems to be that the expectation is that everyone should perform as if the pandemic didn't happen. But yet it actually did, and it's still quite crippling. So a lot of the old school pressures that weren't healthy anyway are now back on families. But families are not really doing all right, and they're not really equipped. They weren't equipped to handle that anyway, but now they're really extra not equipped. And that pressure is just busting at the seams, honestly.
So where do you even begin?
It's an elephant, one bite at a time. I think when you say where do you begin, I assume you mean families. Like where do families mm-hmm. begin with trying to manage this situation? And I think communication and understanding how to communicate and understanding what your teens or adolescents' behavior means is probably the best place to start.
Yeah, here's what I would love to understand. And so this is happening a little bit in our house, but I know that I have a lot of friends and family members that have adolescents or full-blown teenagers that are really struggling with the changes. And so I'm starting to see it in my son, who's 10, where he is less huggy, he's less communicative, he is fighting for his independence, he doesn't, and when I'm thinking, honey, you can talk to me about anything, that's what every parent says, right? But they don't want to. You become, you know, as my cousin has said, it's like a need to know basis overnight. So what happens? What is happening?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that because actually a lot is happening. So I think, should I explain maybe the brain physiology of what's going on?
As long as it's not Huberman.
Not that lengthy.
If you could just decode it for me in a way that I can understand, sure.
Yeah, I'll do my best and I'll be as brief as possible. But no, basically this is a window of time. Adolescence is a very specific window of time where their brains are shifting into gear to prepare for a burst of new information. Their bodies are preparing to be more independent. They're becoming more engineered to look at same age peer relations and prioritize those a little more, because if you think about the caveman days, like the parents are gonna be dying off pretty soon, you know, you gotta go out there and find your own tribe. So they're supposed to be shifting their priorities a little more to same age peers. They're supposed to be, basically they're inventing themselves. And there's a really beautiful, nerdy, geeky book called Inventing Ourselves. And that's what this age is for, is they're discovering, well, who am I? They've spent the first part of their lives looking at their family unit and maybe some other influences and seeing, okay, this is how everybody else does it. And now this is the time to be like, well, how do I do it? And how do I relate to the world? So they're supposed to become more egocentric because they're trying to figure out who they are. They're supposed to rely more on same-age peer relationships because that's who's going to carry them through the next stage of their lives. And they're supposed to basically question everything. And that's where you see that frontal lobe development has slowed down a little bit. And the rest, like the more impulsive parts of the brain, are still developing at full speed. And that's because they're supposed to take chances to figure out, is this part of my identity or is this not? And so it's, to me, it's a really exciting time to be alive if we don't demonize every single thing about it like we tend to do in our culture.
So let me talk about the demonize, because you say demonize, but the parents are the ones that are often demonized by the teenager. This is, or the adolescent, and this is where it's really hard. So how do you flip that? Like, I don't even know where to begin with it.
Well, yeah, and this is basically why I'm constantly saying that the parent-adolescent dynamic is designed to fail in our culture.
Okay.
Like, you're set up for failure. So if you feel like you're failing,
why are you set up for failure?
Because our culture is telling parents, A, everything that their child does is directly representative of how the parent is doing.
Mm.
B, that failure means your child is on the wrong path. You know, any type of failure, any poor mistake means they are immediately on the wrong path. And see that parents should be able to do something about that and rein that in, and that they do have the capabilities of doing something about their child's behavior or decisions. So we're telling parents, you should be able to control all of this. And meanwhile, we're telling teens they should be able to control all of that, because it kind of just trickles down, that pressure, as well as, you know, these mistakes that you're making are not part of becoming a good person. And these feelings that you're having are wrong or they're bad. And so, and that they should be replacing that with, you know, being concerned about things like academics, and they should be replacing that with things like external achievements and winning awards and doing things like that. And it's all really counterintuitive to what's actually going on. So when I say it's set up to fail, it's because we tell parents to tell our teens to do things that are completely against what they're supposed to be doing and how their brain and body is actually developing. So we put them in a combative role with one another right from the start.
But if we're talking about the expectations around, you do still need to go to school, you do still need to communicate with your family, you do still need to live under the roof, you know, what is an ideal state? Like, how do you start to transition what the platform looks like for them to, do we just let them fail? Do we, you know, I think the part that is so hard is when your your kid is telling you, I hate you, or saying you're the worst. Mom, you don't understand anything. And you start to believe it because you hear it over and over and over again. So that aggression is directed towards the parent. And it's hard to make executive level decisions, you know, on what do you do? Okay, fine. I don't know.
Yeah, when you see that kind of dynamic where the kid's anger is mostly directed at you as the parent, that usually is an indicator that you have accidentally, I'm assuming, ended up as an obstacle between your child and their growth. And what I mean by that is we have humans trying to become fully grown humans, right? And in everybody has different traits, and they have to kind of cut their teeth on those traits. So if you have a child with a highly sensitive trait, you know, that child is going to have to learn a lot of tough lessons about how to not be too sensitive, but they're not going to have to learn a whole lot of lessons about being sensitive to others' needs, right? So whatever trait your child has, they've got to bump into the boundaries of how to express that trait in a healthy way and when it starts to become unhealthy for them. What that looks like is making lots and lots of mistakes and having lots and lots of obstacles. So because parents are told they're a protector, right, that you're supposed to protect your children, we tend to stand in the way between them and those natural consequences. So our children, let's say, you know, are going to wear something that you think is going to get them ostracized at school. And when you see them come downstairs in it, you feel it is your duty as a parent to say, you're not leaving the house dressed like that, or, you know, everybody is going to think something about you if you wear that, or bring to their attention, do you know how that looks or how that's perceived? And now you just placed yourself in front of the natural consequence and you made yourself the obstacle. Now you are in their mind, you're just standing in between them and a great life because they didn't get to find out what would happen if they wore that outfit to school. Maybe they would get ostracized and maybe they would learn that lesson. And then you would be a safe place to fall when they get home and be like, I'm so sorry that, you know, people judged you, and I'm so sorry that sucks. What do you need? What can I do? Instead, you've become the obstacle. And now they just see it as, you know, oh, mom. And like, little do you know. And so that happens all the time. And parents don't realize it. How much they caution their kids, how much they try to protect their kids.
So can you give me some more examples of that? Because I believe that wearing something and maybe cautioning, but I imagine there probably is some things that we might do as parents that are far more common that we're not catching.
Grades, being on them about grades, making sure they turn their homework in all the time, especially if you're talking about an adolescent, like you should be pretty hands off with all that. So managing.
How do you do that? Especially if you have kids that are attention deficit, you know, like, and are just distracted. They're on my, you know, they're playing Fortnite or whatever it is. Like, how do you do that?
Yeah. Those kids need longer to learn those things. So let me say, because this always ends up going down a path of like, where does it end? Do I just let my kid do whatever
exactly.
they want?
Yeah. I'm in there. I'm in the boxing ring with you, Cindy.
Yes.
I don't understand.
You're not the only one. So here's a couple of things parents need to know when making these types of parenting decisions about like when to set a boundary and when to let them suffer their own natural consequences. One is that it's very important. So like, to me, I assume it is a parent's priority that they have a relationship with their child long term. Like, I assume that that is important to a parent. And so it's very, very important that parents know that a relationship with any person, but your child included, is not sustainable if it has higher than a 5-to-1 positive interaction to negative interaction ratio.
We're all screwed.
Well, I don't think you are.
All right.
I don't think you are. It's just, that's what I mean. So that hopefully brings into perspective, we have to pick and choose battles. And just to call parents to question is like when I say, you know, don't get involved in school and you immediately go to like, they have to go to school. Mm-hmm. Okay. The boundary could be you have to go to school. Pick that battle. You know what I'm saying? Like, pick the battle, because you'll get arrested if not. It impacts your life if they don't make that choice to go to school. But you don't have to pick the battle of having them show you their homework every night before they turn it in. You don't have to pick the battle of getting grade notifications for every grade that comes in and saying something to them about anything less than an A. Or you don't have to question them about, you know, anytime anything happens in school that, you know, that's anything new or different about their patterns and grades, or whether or not they should take AP courses and all these types of things. Like, all those millions of conversations, you can be hands off about those. And your boundary could just be go and pass. And if you reduce your level of, because first of all, you don't have as much control over that as you think. So you're wasting your breath.
Can you explain that further? Because I'm feeling all kinds of resistance on this and not understanding.
Explain why you don't have like as much control as you think you have?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I can. So we've talked about genetics and nature versus nurture, right? So not to repeat that whole thing, but by the time you're an adult, if your parents weren't traumatic and abusive, they have about roughly like a 10% piece of the pie of how they influence their child. You have a 50% genetic responsibility there, but you can't do much about that. But as far as like your active responsibility, if you're not traumatizing your kid, you're not controlling that much about who they are. You're sharing that with the internet, with their friends, with their teachers, with their, you know, with so many other influences. So A, just to think that you could control that piece of the pie more than you really do, you got to keep that in mind. Also, don't confuse controlling a child's behavior in the moment with teaching them any sort of life lesson or insightful nugget.
What do you mean?
If you make your child make the right decisions, you know, you make your child do all the homework and turn it all in on time, for example, all you've really taught them is that they need someone to control their behavior. And they'll lose either faith in themselves to do something on their own. This is what that looks like long term. Or they just learn to listen to the most commanding voice in the room. And these are not the qualities that we want our kids to have as adults, unfortunately. Like, that's great when you have their best interest in mind and it gets stuff done and it gets them to perform in the way that you want them to perform. But long term, you're just looking at a kid who has sort of defaulted, either believes like someone else has to tell me what to do, I'm not capable on my own, or just find the loudest voice in the room and listen to it. And somebody without their best interest in mind will come along and take advantage of that about them.
So let's talk about homework for a second. Where is the difference between creating a habit and a pattern so they know that you get home, you do your homework, and then you can play. Then you can go on, play video games or whatever. At what point is it okay to release the reins and say, you can do this, versus setting up a habit of that? Or do you just let them fail and realize that they're flunking out, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of expectation around college grades and all of those things too that are wrapped into it.
Yeah, and I think you know how I feel about that. And this is how we got in this position, is more people started going to college. Colleges got harder to get into. For some reason, we think that if it's harder to get into, it's better.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's mandatory that our child go to college to be successful. And so that ripple effect has us now totally stressed out, and like there's no room for failure during a period in life where failure is literally part of figuring out who they are. So that's just my side beef with that.
Mm-hmm. But side beef.
But that's what I mean. We have to calm down. Like, our kids having meh grades is not the worst thing that can happen to them. And so there are no more B students. And this is one of the big
what
problems.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
The B student is dead. That kid has either burnt out and now he's a barely passing, maybe failing student, or that kid is a freaking stressed out A student who's never going to feel like they're good enough. I mean, there's just no more. The B students are all burnt out or stressed out. And that's just the truth of the matter. Hmm. Like, there's just not any regular old students anymore. It's not good enough anymore. B is like the new C. So anyway, you asked me about homework. You see, I'm fired up about this and not at parents. I'm fired up that we allow this lie to continue, and your relationship could be so much easier with your teen than it is. And it's part of looking at this like we're both victims here.
Mm.
You know, like, this sucks for both of us and we both got lied to.
Mm.
But what did you ask me about homework? I totally forgot.
At what point are you helping to establish a habit?
And this is the thing, right? This is the lie. We tell parents that if they just make their child do it long enough, they'll eventually do it there's no room for error, right? So they know, like, you just keep helping them until they do it just the way you taught them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bullshit. That's not how it works. So when it comes to teaching your child stuff, start as early as possible. And first you model it. And that is, like, you know, sit down, do your homework, you know, the whole thing that you're still doing when they're, you know, 16 years old, or a lot of parents are still doing. But that should start way younger, elementary school, like sit down and do your homework or whatever. And then you're around, but they are leading the way, you know, so you see if they do it and you ask them about it. And then you're not really checking all the answers. You're just kind of like, okay, you did it. Put it in your backpack. And then there is the part where you let go and they take over, and they may or may not take all of the suggestions that you have given them through your example. And that is how they learn. Because when they don't, and when you said ADHD kids, these kids need this even more. They need more time to learn these lessons.
Hmm.
So let it go. Let them fail. Because in reality, what really happens when they don't turn in their homework is they get embarrassed by the teacher. The teacher says something to them, or their friends say something to them, especially if you're starting this earlier on. And they have natural consequences. The grade drops. the social judgment. And now your kid can come home and A, that probably teaches them the lesson, especially if you're starting that earlier on. But whatever happens out there, those natural consequences, now you can be the safe place to fall. You know, instead of the nag and instead of the person saying, get it done, let me see it, I don't believe you. And now you're telling them you're a liar, you're telling them they're not capable, you're just telling them all these things, and you're not going to be friends with that person who's saying that to you. Mm-hmm. Now you are the person who's just like, that sucks. Yeah, I guess you do kind of have to do the homework. Do you have a plan? Do you need help? And take like shifting that dynamic more like that. Does that make sense?
That sounds like a cool parent that I don't know that I possess at all in my whole toolbox, but it sounds nice. And I wonder about the communication as well. So as the kids start to redirect their attention towards their peer groups, towards their own internal investigation of whatever that looks like, you know, I think about the privilege that I have to drive my kids right now and that they are under our wing and they still love us and still think we're amazing and they still like to hang out with us. And that is at some point is going to go away. How do you protect, you know, somebody said it's like a long breakup with your teenager. How do you protect that relationship?
Well, I mean, like the 5-to-1 ratio before, where you realize I've got to have better interactions with this person. And the perspective really shifting to, instead of like, I've got to guide and mold and lead and teach, shifting more into, I get to bear witness. I get to bear witness to this human becoming who they are. And I'll tell you one of the biggest things that parents lose that...
Sorry. Hopefully I'll remember to cut this out.
Jeez. That was chaotic.
Yeah, it's still chaotic.
As is parenting adolescents.
Yes. Continue.
One of the things that messes up that dynamic between parents and their kids faster than anything is parents lose faith that this kid's going to be all right, that they're going to figure it out. Mm. Yeah.
And I guess the challenge is determining, is this normal or is this a signal? So let's say the kids' grades drop or all of a sudden they're in the room all the time, they won't come out. And how do you detect what is normal, especially if you are trying to repair the relationship, this 5-to-1 ratio of good interactions? How do you begin to repair it? Or even acknowledge something maybe deeper here.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is like how things become so combative between parents and their teens. And we get into this belief that every dialogue with them has to be combative. But we don't have to show up like that. And it is our duty. I wish it wasn't. It is asking more of us than it is of them, but the truth is, between this dynamic, one of us chose to have this relationship and the other one did not choose it. And we chose for them to be here and they did not choose that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Also, they don't have the fully developed brain, you know? They're missing a whole lot of that frontal lobe logical thinking. We have it. So it has to land on us to be the bigger person. We have to do more work than they're doing. So if you find yourself check and balancing, like, oh, I don't have to do that because they don't do that. This is an unfair relationship. It always was. It always is. Like you said, it is a long breakup. We knew when we had them, we would be saying goodbye. We don't have other relationships like that where, oh, we're going to get more distant with time. That's not how other relationships work. But this one does. And that just freaking sucks. And you can sit and wallow in it. Like, for sure, there are times where I'm just heartbroken over the fact that that's what's happening with our son. Mm-hmm. But if I live there, and if I don't believe in that kid, then that's where I'm going to stay. And if we don't know how to feel those types of sad feelings, it's going to come out as anger. And so that's what I'm talking about that core belief that this person's going to be okay. And when you suggest that them struggling or having mental illness or something like that means they're not going to be okay, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's what messes parents up. Your child struggling in adolescence, your child being depressed, your child having anxiety, your child having anger or behavioral issues does not mean that they're not going to be okay. And it's the minute that you stop believing it, that's when you're going to really see things fall apart. And I really call parents to rally, like, check yourselves and get back to when you knew this was a beautiful child. You knew this person was amazing. And nurture that flame, because if it dies out, there's no relationship possible. How can you have a relationship with someone who does not believe in you? And these things they're going through are perfectly normal. This is the abnormal is normal in adolescence. So please be like the one person at least that believes they're gonna figure this out. They're gonna be okay. I just need to ask them what they need. I need to find out, like, I'll help any way I can. It's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows, but they're going to be okay.
I feel like my tears are going to well up with this, because it just seems so hard to figure out. And I wonder, you know, like, it's so easy as a parent to catastrophize the moment you see struggle, that are they going to, you know... Have you watched Ginny and Georgia?
No.
Ginny, it's so good. You've got to see it. I don't know how to do it, but they do. It's a mother daughter team. The daughter is 16 years old and is kind of totally in this. And the mom is like a single mom trying to, you know, kind of run a scam to, like, protect her children, you know, and do all this stuff. But there's a lot of self-harm. And so this is one of the shows that's, like, even bigger than Stranger Things, you know? Kids are watching it. Kids are watching the self-harm, you know? And so even me, I'm watching this going, oh my God, if I knew my kids were seeing this, would they get ideas from it? You know, like, would that sound like a good idea? So immediately I'm catastrophizing. My kids aren't watching this, for God's sakes, but eventually they will see a program that is like that, you know? And so I guess I wonder, how do I know they're going to be okay? How do I try? You know, of course they're beautiful kids. And I guess I'm not ready to let them fall that hard, you know?
And that's the assumption, that you can prevent it, right? Like, you can prevent them from falling hard. And that's the thing, the protection, the idea that we gave parents, that they're there to protect and they should be able to protect. It's not real. It's not true. And particularly by adolescents, that's not a realistic expectation. And it's what makes you suffocate them. They feel like a lot of the behaviors that parents see from their kids because they're feeling suffocated and they're feeling trapped and they're feeling like they don't have any control over their lives. And so they're ugly and they're nasty and they lash out because they suck at articulating themselves. They suck at it. So how they deliver the message blows. But the message that they're delivering, there's something legitimate there. You want to look at what it is they're communicating, not how they're communicating it. But this belief that you're going to protect them is not real. I'm not going to be able to protect my son. I haven't. He's gotten hurt. He's gotten into pickles. We've had moments where we're sitting on the couch going, what did we do wrong? we could not have prevented that from happening. And now I could not be more grateful that those moments happened. Because here's what parents really, really, really need to listen to. How our kids remember us, when you're thinking about like, how are they going to remember me? How is this relationship going to end up? Where's this in the end? What kind of parent am I going to be reflected on as? The answer to that question, I am telling you, after talking to plenty and plenty and plenty of teens and plenty of former teens, is how we showed up when they failed. That's it.
And is it a game of pile on or not?
How do you mean?
Pile on of like, they're getting in trouble from the school. They're getting in trouble from the principal, their teacher, their friends are mad at them. And because of all that, because they're failing in school, parents are piling on as well. So what is a better safe place to fall? You know, you've said this, Cindy, all the time, that our only job as a parent is to give them a safe place to fall. But in practice, what does that look like?
Well, and I say, and set boundaries.
And set boundary. Okay.
So that is important.
What does that look like in practice?
In real life is when you find out your kid sent the nudes, when you find out your kid self-harms, when you find out your kid is the bully, whatever it might be. How do you show up? And how you show up is by their side. You don't say it's fine what happened or it's okay what you did. You say, what's going on? How can I help? I love you still. I'm here for you. I am still in your corner and nothing you can do is going to change that. So what do we do from here? And it's a much more collaborative, I believe in you. And that's where that belief that they're gonna figure life out. These are good eggs. These kids are good eggs. Mm. And you have to believe that. If you don't, who is going to? Where are they going to get the belief that they're anything worth anything if no one believes it? If everybody thinks that they're a hot mess. So at least be the one. And I've done it. I've had to sit on the couch thinking, oh my God, I cannot believe my kid did this. And I had to say, this is adolescence. This is what it looks like. You made a mistake. What do we do now? What do we do now? Not how could you? What were you thinking? You could have ruined your life. I don't do all that. I mean, so safe place to fall is the main priority is, are you okay? No matter what they did, are you okay? What's going on? How can I help?
Let's talk about different parenting styles. So let's say, aside from both parents listening to this podcast, how do you parent a kid when your spouse or partner does it completely different or undermines it or doesn't agree with, or even doesn't hold the boundaries? You know, what happens when they're completely disparate?
I mean, that makes everybody's job harder when y'all aren't on the same mm-hmm. page. But as far as, you know, that makes things more chaotic, but, you can still preserve your relationship with your child, you know, and you can still be very clear about if you feel like this is the right way to support this person, you know, then you just kind of have to support that person in that way. And hopefully your spouse or ex-partner sees that and is inspired by it or sees that it's helping the relationship or something. But either way, you kind of got to have to stay the course. They don't always, especially men, I have to say, like, they really aren't, that doesn't come as naturally to them to be mm-hmm. a safe place to fall.
But all of this seems like not natural for all of us. I'm just saying speaking on behalf of mothers, mm-hmm. whether I'm right or not, this doesn't seem as natural. And I know through some of our conversations that we've had, I've adjusted a lot of parenting with my kids and it's made a world of difference. I would love to get a peek of what it's like when you're in session with a teenager. What do they share with you? What do they want?
Oh yeah. So I literally did a personal study on this where I asked all the teenagers that I work with the same question. It was, what do you wish your parents knew? And I mean, it was really consistent that they wish their parents knew that they're doing the best that they could. And like that they make mistakes and they're human too. And that they don't want to be like the difficult teens, especially who are a little bit harder to love. They don't want to be like that any more than you want them to be like that. But they don't know how else to communicate. And so 9 times out of 10, the teens that I see who are really struggling, so I don't have like easy cases. They are doing the best that they can. And when they have better tools, they'll use better tools. And I say that about everything from being combative to self-harming. I mean, it's pretty common, self-harm. For this culture, it's very, very common. And I always say to them when they open up to me and let me know that they're self-harming, when you have a better tool, you'll use the better tool. I don't say, so you got to stop. What are you thinking? What are you doing? I say, when you have a better tool, you'll use the better tool.
But what's a better tool?
Learning to feel their feelings. Yeah.
That's a powerful one. Can we let that one breathe for a second?
Sure.
What does it feel like? What does it look like to allow a teen to feel their feelings?
Well, I mean, I think we have to think about what it would feel like for us to be allowed to feel those feelings.
Yeah, let's go back to that. Let's start there.
I think we're quick, and this is, you know, this has just been a generational issue. Like, we definitely weren't allowed to feel ours. And so we want to fix. We want to jump into fix mode real quickly. And so with our kids, it's the same thing. We don't want to see them sad. We don't want to see them angry. So we do things like give in to the anger or try to fix the sadness. And really, it's just okay to feel those feelings and to just sit in them and just trust that your body is going to return you back once it's processed whatever it is that triggered that feeling.
Does it help when a parent says to somebody, a child that maybe doesn't really want to hear from their parent, does it help to hear, it's okay to feel sad, it's okay to explore it, I understand you're angry, feel it?
Yeah, that doesn't hurt, but I'll tell you the number one thing that a parent
who
has a tumultuous relationship with their child, where they really should start is vulnerability on their own part. So the best way to start reversing that dynamic of combativeness, and I'll be honest with you, this is a two-person relationship, so you could do all the work in the world, and I can't guarantee your kid is going to respond to it. Mm-hmm. They could be adamantly, you know, just opposed to that relationship ever working. And if that's what they've decided, there's no tool in the world that's going to reverse that. But to best set yourself up for that outcome of reversing the conflict and the constant, you know, just negative feelings towards each other is to start being vulnerable, to start sharing how scared you feel, to start sharing all why your kid, what your kid is triggering about you. Because I'll tell you, it probably is triggering something about you. A lot of us learn to hate ourselves during adolescence. And you'll see your child doing a perfectly normal behavior that you also did during adolescence. And it's when you learn to hate yourself, and you see them doing it, and you start getting crazy trying to stop them from being like you, stop them from making the same mistakes you did. And you'll find yourself really acting out of character because you're being triggered by that. And so starting to identify those triggers and starting to identify what you're really feeling and sharing that instead of the lectures, instead of the, you know, little dialogues you read in books, start sharing like the worst mistakes you ever made, the things that you're the most ashamed of, the darkest moments in your life. If you start telling them those stories and rolling over and showing your belly, you know, the belly of vulnerability, come on in and kick me. I'm telling you, it is your best chance at reversing that tide.
Oh my goodness. What about that? That's really good. What about screen time? We've done full episodes on this. You can go back. I forget what episode it is. It's Teens and Screens. that that we've done with Cindy and Rob Roseman, who the podcast host of WTF Divorce.
He's cool.
Yeah, he sure is. So we did a really deep dive on that. But I'm thinking about, you know, kids are on their phones so much, and so they're not necessarily engaging with the parents, you know? And so it has come up, like, in the car, you know? It's like the one time you kind of have them trapped and want to talk to them, but they're buried in their phones as well. So, you know, like, how do you kind of manage the boundaries around phone timing as it relates to communication with you or with the family?
Yeah, I'll try to kind of keep it reined into like screens and how they might impact your dynamic with your child. Because like you said, they can go find out, like, I don't know, safety and all those things. But the first thing we have to do is respect the fact that their virtual worlds are very much their real worlds to them. It's not fake to them. You know, culturally, mm-hmm. this is, and we have to take a little ownership of how it got like this, because we stopped letting kids go outside on their own. We stopped letting them free play. We stopped, like, we took the outside world, the real world, away from them. Mm. And then we handed them screens, and we didn't monitor them. We gave them, like, free reign of a virtual world. And so teens are going to go where they're free. So I highly encourage, if you could nip this in the bud or like start your culture this way, is to have a free real world, like have the reins as loose as possible in the real world to encourage them to go into that pasture, and have much more restrictive reins on the virtual world earlier on.
Wow.
Because they're going to go where they're free. And I promise you what they're going to find in the real world is a whole lot better than what they're going to find in the virtual world.
What if they're already down that path?
Yeah, they are, probably are. That's back to respect that it's real. Mm-hmm. Respect that that's their real life. That's not, don't say like, those aren't your real friends, or I'm right in front of you. Like, those kind of comments are really dismissive to a very real life. Like, you wouldn't want them to come up to you and be like, your fake friends, and say things like that about your friends, right? So respect that that's real for them. And so if interrupting their text chat is interrupting a conversation that they're having, and respect that that is really how that is. We created this dynamic, so deal with it. Like, I mean, by adults is what I mean by we created it, big tech especially. But so respect that. So make sure you're taking that into consideration when you're having the conversations you're having with them. And so just like you would if they were going to have a group of friends over, if they had a car full of friends and they were all chatting it up, would you really be like, excuse me, you know, I want to talk about your day or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if there was some kind of like conversation about it, collaboration, like, hey, I would like to have time to start connecting with you. When would be the best time for you for us to connect? Like, would it be bedtime? Would it be in the car? Would it be, you know, once a week date? Like, what would work for you? And then they're going to be much more invested in that then. So like, you're not as much in competition with the screens as much as you are asking for some of their time, so they can put aside their virtual world to hang out with you.
Mm. So I always ask you, what do you know that you wish other people could know? Which this whole episode has been this, but any parting thoughts?
Yeah, it's two things. One is, especially when you're talking about digitally, mm-hmm. like their digital lives and things like that, you want to think of childhood and parenting and all that, is you always want to have the tightest reins first and slowly loosen them. So putting the genie back in the bottle is not how it goes. And like, most parents are like, oh, here's your iPad, and like, run free on it because you're not going to get into anything. And then suddenly they want, like, you know, protection software once you get caught, like, looking at something sketchy. Mm-hmm. And so you really want to have all that safety software and monitoring and all that stuff early on. And then you want to slowly loosen the reins. Another thing I see parents do is they're like not really paying much attention to what their kids are doing. And then at 16, they get Life 360 and they're tracking their every move because now they're driving. And yeah, it's terrifying. But that's, again, like, you want to loosen the reins, and that's the real world. So I'm actually not a fan of tracking devices on kids. My kid's 15. When he's 16, I will not have Life 360, as long as he shows up and he seems to be being the person that he tells us he's being, and then we don't see any suspicious behavior or feel a different vibe off him, I'm not going to track where he's going. I'm
going
to trust.
Is that hard for you or no?
Yeah, it's hard. This is all hard. It's easier said than done. But I know what the consequences look like. I see it all the time. So that helps keep me in check. That, like, don't track the kid. Because
what are the consequences of tracking your kid? They don't feel trusted.
They feel suffocated. You're once again putting yourself as the obstacle between them and freedom. And then it's just distrusted kids just become untrustable kids. Like, they'll just show up and be what you think they're gonna be.
Mm.
So my best bet is to trust him and let him lose that trust. And even when he loses it, though, it's not about anger. It's about what's going on. What do you need? This is part of adolescence, is failure. The last thing is communication. And why isn't my kid telling me things? Why aren't they open it? Why are they a closed book? And that is a little bit tied to the vulnerability I said before. If you can't expect your kids to tell you everything, and you're not telling them everything. And I think a lot of us don't want to be honest about that we do not.
Yeah, that you were caught in the bushes with your bra over your head.
Right. Well, and even that, like, in this very moment, I have no idea what I'm doing as a parent. Like, right now, I don't know what I'm doing. Right now, I'm terrified. Right now, I hope it works out, but I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So being more transparent about that is going to allow them to be a little more transparent. Because if you're just sort of lecturing, if you're trying to show them a model adult, like, I'm modeling for them what I would want them to be, it's just not very fun. Like, you're just not very relatable, and you're definitely not who I'm calling in a pickle. But if I know you've been there too, if I know you know what it feels like to be insecure, or you know what it feels like to be bullied, or you know what it feels like to be a bully, like, whatever it might be, you're probably the person I'm more likely to go to. To be like, I suck at this too. We're all in this together.
We all suck.
Yeah.
Everybody sucks.
Nobody knows what they're doing.
Nobody knows. Cindy, how can people get in touch with you or work with you?
Well, since I'm not really on social media anymore.
Oh, I'm still upset over this.
Sorry. Now it's the old fashioned way, and that's email. You can find like my email and everything else on my website, which is cindyrobinsonllc.com.
Well, I love what you're doing. Thank you so very much for coming back and talking about this very important topic and blowing all of our minds.
I know. Thank you, because this was not easy to hear. I think a lot of it. So I'm sorry, but.
Oh, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. I am so grateful for Cindy Robinson and her sage advice. This will give you so much to think about and rethink about how we understand our children. I hope you'll share this far and wide, because if this is the truth, these methods need to be amplified by us, by you, the listener, to change the culture, to have these conversations in your own circles, to change the culture and help our families heal in a healthier way. I've linked all of Cindy's information in the show notes. And if you found value in this, I encourage you to support this show, Late Learner, and to help me bring more episodes like this. You will get all episodes ad-free and early, plus bonus content for only a few bucks a month at patreon.com/latelearner. I also encourage you to sign up for the Atlanta Wellness Retreat called Calm in the Chaos. It's the Atlanta Beltline Mini Retreat on February 18th in Atlanta at allisonhair.com/calm. I'm also excited that I have a new offering for busy professionals, entrepreneurs, and creatives to have a free 20-minute call to help you co-design a new plan of wellness focusing on amplifying your very best you. Everything is at allisonhair.com. Be good to yourself so you can be better for others. I'll see you on the socials before I see you on the pod next week.